Hello and welcome to the Food and Drink Show with myself, Karen Morton. And a little later on in the show, we will be, of course, welcoming Paul Couchman, the Regency cook, to share some recipes with us. And we're going to be reminiscing about picnics and indeed giving you some ideas of what you can put in your picnic hamper. Carrying on our theme from last month, it is summer, so it is all good to go eating out al fresco style. And that's what a picnic is all about. Originating in France in the 17th century, whenever the royal parks were opened up after the French Revolution. It started off very much as something that high society would take part in, and very lavish affairs indeed. But of course, then it became more commonplace among the middle classes. And then made its way over to the UK, and boy, have we adopted the picnic. It is certainly something that we love. And National Picnic Week celebrates all that is great with packing up a basket or a backpack and eating out. We're also celebrating beer, and during the month of June, on the 15th of June to be exact, it was National Beer Day. There has been an ever increasing amount of low and non-alcoholic beers available, and there's even a fair in London which has just happened, all about promoting low alcohol and non-alcoholic beers. Now, a brewery in Sussex has been literally going mad brewing such beers, and I went along to Hepworth Brewery, nestled in the heart of Sussex, to find out a little bit more. Based in Pulborough, I caught up with Andy Hepworth to know more about their brewing processes, and it was such a fantastic day. The Food and Drink Show is sponsored by Brighton Gin, the most gorgeous gin, coming in Pavilion Strength and Navy Strength, or Seaside Strength, I think it's officially known as. That's my favourite of all. And if you have not been to have a tour around how they make gin, it is a lovely affair where you also get to drink gin as well as seeing how it's made. If you pop along to brightongin.com, you can go into the events and book yourself a tour, or maybe as a nice gift. And they're happening every Saturday running through the summer months. And there's a full timetable there for you to book in. It's really a lot of fun. And as we're talking about a picnic hamper, I noticed on the Brighton Gin website, which I thought, again, an amazing gift. Or maybe you want to have, you know, sort of your drinks hamper and then your food hamper. But they actually have a picnic hamper online, a lovely wicker hamper, and in it you have soft drinks, you have ales, you've also got a sparkling wine, and you have Brighton Gin, which comes in a can already mixed up with blood orange, or you can also have the raspberry crush. How easy is that? All of the drinks in the hamper are from Sussex producers, so you can cater for everyone in that hamper. So without further ado, let's go off to Pulborough to join Andy Hepworth at Hepworth Brewery. And we're going to sort of learn things like to chill or not to chill your beer, taking a look at barley, hops, yeast and water, and the benefits of organic coming from Goodwood Estate, like barley that goes into the beer. And I loved an expression that he shared with me. Whenever he goes along to take a look at the barley in the fields at Goodwood, I get to walk in a field of barley. There's something quite lovely about that, isn't there? So join me now at Hepworth Brewery. Okay, Andy, we're now sitting with cake, with ale, of course, your own ale in it. And we've got, well, I'm very excited. I see some glasses on the table. I see some bottles. One that's catching my eye, because with the range that you do, it's kind of like, where do we start? But here's one that is celebrating something rather special, to celebrate 20 years of Hepworth's independent brewing. So what went into this one to make it so special?
Well, as I said before, we brew quite traditional styles, and one of the styles that is a favourite of mine is the Sussex winter beer, which is called Old Ale. It's basically a porter. They're usually between 4 and 5%. But we decided that we would do one at 8% and see, because we wanted it to last and be something to be revered. But you can't always make a stronger beer out of a weaker beer. It doesn't always work. So we made some adaptions, and we were very pleased with the results. So we've bottled it off to a very limited number for our sort of friends, family, and a few of our customers. But it is just to celebrate the fact that we've survived 20 years as a brewery, which Amazing. Not too many do. And hopefully there'll be 20 more to go.
Okay, so this is really, as you said, it's giving it as a gift to, yeah. to family and friends. Yeah. So 8%. Now, what is the first beer that we're going to try?
Well, the first beer, we're going to try with start off, if you like, light beers. It's a brand new low alcohol lager that we've developed. Low alcohol beers have come on a long way, certainly in my brewing career. And they're now much more flavourful and much more popular. So we were looking to brew something a little different because there are two or three out there, some very good ones. But we wanted to do something different, and we decided to really go the most difficult route and try and do it with organic ingredients. And there aren't too many of those around, so it makes it more difficult. And we've managed it. But we found we needed something to replace the loss of strength. And when we were trying to find something suitable, you can use things like, quite often you'll find in low alcohol beers, lactose, mm-hmm. to replace the body that isn't there, or maltodextrin. Well, we looked around the brewing industry, not just beer, but wine, spirits, mm-hmm. and we came across agave, which is, of course, the plant that tequila is made from. So we got a couple of components of the agave plant and tried them out and found they work really well with lager beers. So what you've got here is an agave brewed, low alcohol, low calorie, gluten-free, organic beer. So it ticks all the boxes. Our hops are dried and pressed once they're picked. They have to be done very quickly. There's a very specific window for doing that in September. And that means they can be kept then for a couple of years, but on the whole it's easier to use them if they're ground up. If you use whole leaf, it requires a slightly different vessel, which we do have, and we sometimes do that, but for storage purposes and for some styles it's better to use what we would call hot pellets.
Okay, now that's really interesting, and I know them of course from using them to decorate with wonderful garlands of hops in the autumn time. It's great. They're beautiful, I know. Yeah. And expensive to get, too.
Yeah, yes. I mean, we will be paying, in terms of a sort of vegetable, if you like, we will be paying somewhere between £9 and £40 a kilo for hops if we contract in advance, and we contract 2 or 3 years ahead for that. So, yeah, they are a very expensive ingredient. Mm. They're a very useful ingredient. You know, they are the ones, that's the bit that gives you the bitterness. It's also a natural preservative. So, for instance, in an era when you have an army in India and sailing ships take 6 weeks to get there and your beer only lasts 4 weeks, you have to brew the beer to last the journey, not just for flavour, it's actually last journey. So you put more hops in because it's a natural preservative. You put a malt in called crystal malt, which is a malt sort of made all the wrong way, but actually it ends up with the grains having granules of caramelised sugar in it, toffee in a grain, which gives a great flavour to the beer, but is also a natural antioxidant. There's virtually nothing in beer you cannot do with the right ingredients. So India Pale Ale was actually developed to survive the ship journey to India. Not because of its particular flavours, it has now become a predominant character in a lot of beers, very hoppy beers, quite light. But it's, as I say, history is involved in everything we do. And it has different effects on us from different times. And of course, the weather is the other thing that has a big effect.
Okay, so here we are. So it's
yes,
Aztec.
This needs to be. Aztec.
Agave brewed. 5% low alcohol. It's gluten-free, low-calorie, vegan-friendly. And that's going to go down very well, particularly in the Brighton market as well, too. I can see a lot of smiling faces as I'm about to dive in. It says here, that's a big claim, it's truly divine. So cheers. Let's taste it. There's a lovely smell.
Well, that's a German hop called Tettnang.
Oh, it's good.
And it should be light and refreshing. And obviously, the brewer's skill is to try and make you want another one.
Well, there is a lovely aftertaste, and it does have that, yes. Shall we go for round two? And you definitely would with that. So it's bottled, and it'll be available in all good off licenses
from July. So it is brand new. Couldn't get any newer.
How exciting! And we talked about, you know, trends and fashion. Mm-hmm. And of course, low alcohol and gluten free are very much, sort of off the moment as well too, and going to continue to be so. So that's very exciting. So we're kind of with the trends. What have you got that's sort of traditional then? Would you say that you're, you know, would be a Hepworth stronghold?
Our biggest selling ale is something called Sussex. Well, it's called Sussex because Sussex is a style of beer. And Sussex is an agricultural county, and again, as I go back to history, most of our customers in the past would have been farmers, and they would have come in from the fields, have a few pints, and then go back out and expect to plough a straight furrow, which would mean really it couldn't be too strong. But farmers, you know, they're quite exacting customers as well, and given that we are a barley growing and a hop growing county, would want a light but flavourful beer. So you get quite a hoppy, light beer as being the predominant beer of most rural breweries, certainly in this area. And as we're traditional brewers, we wanted to fulfil that market, especially as I said, the barley and the hops come from Sussex anyway. So it truly is a Sussex beer. And what we find is that because it's not too strong, it's only 3.5%, people can have two or three pints and you'll still be quite capable. And people like that. You know, I used to play a lot of rugby and we still like to drink quite a lot of volume, but you know, don't necessarily want to be completely K-eyed. Which is why low alcohol beers are making their way as well. But it's a favourite. It has been always, and it's just a nice, clean, refreshing beer. I'll just go and open one.
Excellent. Oh, we've got to try that. And, you know, when you think about it too, through history, it was safer to drink beer than it was to drink water. So.
It's certainly safer. Basically, pathogens don't grow in beer, which means that you don't get harmful bacteria or viruses in beer. So that is a safety aspect of brewing that's always been there, and hops being a natural preservative help promote that.
And this fruitcake, my word.
It's good, isn't it?
And it's a big shame to have to pour away your lovely Aztec lager, because we are doing a proper tasting, listeners, and we can't sit here and drink full glassfuls. Which, as I always say, goes totally against the grain as an Irish girl.
Certainly does with a brewer. So this is a typical traditional ale, a lightish ale.
It's very definitely a light ale, because often when we think about ales, you know, you sort of think of them of sort of that more murky brown colour. But this is golden.
Yeah, and that is the natural colour. I have to say that after...
Like honey.
Yeah. And this is with there's two very traditional British hops in this. One is called Admiral, which is very good at giving you the bitter part of the beer. And the other is Golding, that gives you a more rounded floral character to the beer. So rarely does one hop on its own make a good beer. You normally have to combine two or three together to get a really complete beer.
That's very refreshing.
And although it would be normally classified as a bitter, it is quite bitter, but it's not so bitter as to be aggressive and dry your throat.
It's smooth on the tongue, and then you get that aftertaste of the bitterness there sitting on your tongue. You've got this cold, and this whole thing about beers, what do you chill, what do you not chill?
Yeah, well, because it's such a hot day, I put some ice in the fridge. Normally, I would say serve this at 13 degrees, because the temperature you drink beer changes the parts of the beer that you actually taste. A good beer is always a combination of malt and hops, and if the balance is correct, then it's a very Moorish drink. Mm. If you take down the temperature on a beer, what happens is the malt fraction gets depressed. This makes the hop fraction more dominant, and therefore tends to make it more acerbic and less, more bitter, which is why lager beers, which are served at a much lower temperature, are not terrifically bitter. So you need to get that right. In fact, with the old ale, for instance, which is a winter beer, you can drink that at room temperature, and it's lovely. In fact, the warmer it gets, the more malty fraction you get out, the more it feels like a complete beer. And quite frankly, if you get into a pub with a roaring fire in the middle of winter, I have a pint of that, you're not going anywhere fast.
You bring me slippers. I'm not going anywhere. Fantastic. That sounds great. This is really, really lovely. It is refreshing, and I know you've chilled it here today, but it's certainly very good. And the colour is very appealing as well, being the golden. Yeah.
And it's a very traditional beer, quite nice and light, very drinkable.
Yeah.
And then you go on to other styles. You go to Pullman, the traditional best bitter style, which is a slightly more bitter, bigger impact, therefore the malt is a bit more as well, to make, let's say, get that balance right between one and the other. And you can have very sweet beers as long as they're well hopped. And you can have very dry beers as long as the hop is not too strong. And it's always that balance, and you can tell when a beer is ripe. Yeah, basically, I'm a great one for, would you buy another one? And for instance, when we were developing a beer, I always take two bottles home, drink the first one, and then if I want to open the second one, I know I've got it right.
Oh, that's a good way of knowing whether you've really enjoyed something or not, isn't it?
It is, because it's not just about, if you like, the scientific measurements of what's in beer. Does it appeal? And you can write a specification for a beer in scientific terms, and you could have two beers fitting that, and they would be different because there are bits that we cannot measure. And in the end, it is how drinkable is it? If somebody in the brewery likes a style of beer, we'll create one for them. You can go to research, market research. Our feeling is that we get it wrong no less than if you went to market research by just listening to either our customers or a staff who drink beer as well. Sure, that's why most of them work here, actually.
Yeah. What could be more enjoyable in the countryside working for a company who makes beer? So where are we going next?
This is the boiler house that provides all services. And that means all our water pumps, our boiler itself, our air compressors, but also something we developed here ourselves, which is a beer source heat pump. Because to make beer last longer, we have a couple of options of what we can do to, say, extend the shelf life. Now, you can put some chemicals in it to help preserve it, but that's not our way. We'd rather use a rather simple method of putting it in a tank and keeping it cold. And the longer and the colder we mature it, the more stable it will become. So it's just a matter of time and temperature. Well, that means we have to keep it quite cold. And normally chillers would just put out warm air into the atmosphere. So what we developed was a water heat exchanger that takes the heat from the beer as it's cooling and puts it into water. And that's used in two ways. One is to heat the offices. So really, the offices are heated by beer, but two, we preheat the water for brewing, because we have to have water at about 75-80 centigrade for brewing beer to start with. So if we can get it up to 40 through the chillers, then that has saved us so far about a third of the oil we would normally burn to provide steam. And we think we're on our third generation now, as we've got better equipment and we've got more confidence in what we can do, So we're now up to a third. And I think, you know, in the next year, we'll probably push that to half the oil use that we would cut out, which, you know, to me is the right way to go. And that's actually powered by solar panels. So we've got 30 kilowatts of solar panels on the roof here. And you'll see in a second, we're extending our warehouse. We will double that next year to add some more energy into the company. We already buy all the excess energy from 100% renewable sources anyway, but we'd rather try and generate it here from energy that we're consuming anyway.
It's amazing. And it kind of, the whole sustainability piece. And I wonder, you know, when we think about a circular economy, I mean, with all the moving parts that you have from supply to looking at conserving energy, how circular could you be?
Almost entirely. And I think we'll achieve that within the next 5 years. And that's really because at the moment we have to deal with our effluent, which is basically cleaning out of vessels, because our spent malt goes to cattle feed. Our hops, well, they tend to end up on our engineer's allotment, where he's got a secret vineyard.
Oh, wow.
But you can use it, you know, a lot. Horticulturists take it for manure. Our spent yeast can go to pig feed, because it's got lots of protein in it and it's good for them. You have to kill it first, otherwise they become two happy little pigs. But the liquid effluent, we could be bringing in an experimental anaerobic digester in a container later in the year, because that should produce methane. Now, obviously, we don't want to put methane in the atmosphere, but if we can put that around into a combined heat and power unit, that can be burnt and then provide both hot water, so heat, recovered heat water from 40 that we've currently got from our chillers to 80, so we don't have to heat our water at all, and then provide electricity that would then power the remaining steam that we needed from a steam, electric steam boiler instead of an oil steam boiler. With that, and recovering carbon dioxide from our fermentations and reusing that, we're going to get very, very close to being zero. It's a lot of investment and there's quite a lot of engineering involved, and we are still brewers, we're not effluent handlers, but we think we can get there bit by bit. The biggest barrier really is, unfortunately, due to the pandemic, we've survived it reasonably well, but it has eaten into our reserves, so it reduces the amount we can invest in the future. It means it will just probably be a little bit slower than we'd hoped to be.
We'll come back to COVID times and survival, Andy, because it is a very big part of the conversation. So back here, really, you know, massive tanks, you know, of every shape and size, both outdoor, indoor. I mean, part of it feels as well too, it's a bit like, you know, going into a very large farm, you know, yes, too, with some of the apparatus that you have, the vehicles,
well,
etc.
Farm, because that's where that grain, that's the spent grain trailer. So our waste malt is going into that. And we supply three farms with grain for their cattle. So that's going back to them. One of them's organic, so it does literally get, the manure goes back on the soil. They grow barley as well. So, you know, these are all things that help you get to the sort of cyclic economy. It will never, I don't think, be perfect, but we can get a whole lot closer than we are now, pretty much using existing technology. We're not relying on new technology. Actually, it's just developing on stuff that is there, or in some cases, just making it smaller. It's available to bigger companies, but nobody's making it on a small scale yet. I think that will come with time, and it will come with people like us saying, well, actually, we think we can adapt that, and trying things out. So would you like to try another one?
Definitely.
Our low alcohol ale, which is called Spartan. This again has some agave in it, but not all agave.
And this is a low alcohol.
Low alcohol.
Low calorie.
Yeah. It's not organic, but that's because we struggle to get the ingredients to do an ale.
Gluten-free.
Yep. Yeah. Vegan friendly.
The character of a full-strength brew is obtained by a complex blend of new variety hops, combined with your Sussex-grown golden hops. So, new variety of hops?
Yes, the new varieties are developed largely to be disease-resistant because the more traditional varieties can't be grown in certain areas because there are long-term disease problems and you'd end up having to spray the crops a lot. And quite frankly, you know, if you're going to use it in a beer, you don't want to be spraying with all sorts of stuff. So, Golding is a very traditional one, which I happen to favour. And we like the name of Spartan for it, so it's sort of lean on one thing and strong on the other. And we fashioned this to be similar to Sussex, the beer you tried earlier, because that we know that, although it's not a very strong beer already, we know that flavour is a flavour that's liked. So the Aztec was actually fashioned on our Saxon lager, which is our best-selling beer overall. So we took the same sort of hopping regimes, trying to create something similar to it. You can't create exactly the same thing. So this should be light, refreshing.
So again, it's more sunshine yellow than golden in colour.
So you'll get a bit of bitterness there, but it won't grab your throat.
There's more of savoury and even a herby kind of scent nose to it.
That's coming from the Golding essence, which is the aromatic part of the hop, and we have to add that in separately. It's quite a complex brew, this one, because you have to sort of build up the flavours on what is basically a very weak beer. And so you have to do a lot more building to the flavour than just, we can do a bit of this, do a bit of that. It had to be structured and then layer on layer put in there so that as a whole, it makes a good drink.
And I can imagine that it must be difficult because there, you know, I've tried a number of non-alcoholic or very low alcoholic beers, but some leave a very metallic taste in your mouth. So just getting it right, you know, that you can enjoy it and not feel that you're losing out being the nominated driver. I'm really getting here, it's like mint or so, you know, not that that would be there, but that's the sort of aftertaste that I'm getting, which is very refreshing, considering that we're in summer as well.
Yes, what we were hoping to do was to create a beer that you could have in a round. Instead of just have one bottle of something you didn't really want to drink anyway all evening while your mates are having a good time so that you could join in the round.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And what temperature would you serve this at?
Again, for an ale, I would say 13 centigrade. This one's probably a bit colder at the moment, but which would allow more multi-character to come out. Ales are better at 13 centigrade. Lagers, you really want 4 to 6 degrees.
But I'm very happy with this being chilled. I find it very refreshing.
On a day like this, it's ideal.
I'm still getting flavours coming through there. But that's probably because traditionally being a lager person, you know, then you're sort of used to having that pull. No, it's very good.
And the feedback from customers has been excellent. And a lot of people are saying, we wouldn't have known this didn't have alcohol.
Sun sinking down, stars getting brighter, fireflies dancing like free fall lighters, set the mood for a good time nighter. Backwoods boys can't stop watching them little hips swaying, swinging, rocking and dropping, bumping, can't spill and triple sipping and popping. He know us, he know we ain't stopping.
So, Paul, here we are, another radio show, which is fantastic, talking about food and the weather. Gosh, we've gone from extreme heat to sort of rain and humid thunderstorms, the whole gambit, which is a true summer in the UK, don't you think?
Yeah, and also gives me a chance to actually start making the dishes I really like, which are like the autumn dishes. So I really love cooking in the autumn. So I really like slow cooked meat dishes, for example. We've got one really on fiend today, actually. But the rain has given me a chance to eat them because, you know, it's really hot. The only thing you really want is salads.
Yeah, that's the thing. And it's lovely, but you can get a little bit bored unless you're playful with salads and you are really think about, you know, sort of varying them up a little bit. And like you, I kind of agree, the sort of rainy day that was yesterday, I sort of got stuck into some lovely, you know, sort of vegetables, the greens and, you know, green beans along with my salmon. And that was lovely. And it was salmon en croûte with a bit of pastry. So I hadn't felt like that in the extreme heat. So you're right. It's nice. We need, the weather is our friend. It helps us to vary our diet and go along with our mood, which is really nice. And you're saying there about our theme, of course, we've got two themes running today. We're carrying on with the picnic thing because we're coming into National Picnic Week, running from the 19th to the 27th of June. And of course, also we're paying homage to beer because it's also, we're celebrating beer this month. And I've been along to Hepworth Brewery in Sussex and Andy gave me a wonderful tour. And we have been enjoying the produce, of course, coming back with bottles. Bottles rattling in my car. And you've been experimenting with some ale there in line with the theme. And of course, I take it, I think you might have given us a clue because you were experimenting with slow cooking. So tell us more about what you've been doing, Paul.
So I've gone back to the Elizabethan period with a recipe for stewed steaks. And it's actually, the original is made with mutton, but I've just used lamb steaks for this. Oh, and it's delicious. It's just such a find, really. So it's a lovely book. It's a book, National Trust book, which has got loads of history in it, but it's also got the recipes of the period. And this is a recipe from, originally, from the Good Housewife's Jewel, which is a lovely title, isn't it? By Thomas Dawson. Thomas Dawson. And the date is 1596. And here is, this is Sarah Paston's version of it, but I've actually played with it around a bit with it myself. So I just run you through the recipe.
Oh, I'd love it. Yes.
So what you'll need lamb steaks. You need some butter, some oil. You need a large onion. You need the ale. It's got rosemary chopped, thyme chopped, parsley chopped, some allspice and some cloves, and some raisins. And also it's got prunes in it. So what you do basically, you take your butter and your oil, you heat that up together, and then you take your lamb steaks, and I chop them up into pieces and then drop them into the oil and let them sizzle really brown. You know, you really want a high heat for this. And to get it all nice and crispy on the outside. So then pop those out of the pan and then introduce your onion, which has been chopped. Cook that until it's really, really soft. So I really take my time with this. So 15, probably 20 minutes, you know, until it's lovely and soft. Then you add the meat back and then you pour in your ale. And again, you can use any ale. We've used the Hepworth's, but any ale is suitable. Guinness would do as well. You know, all sorts of things are possible. So any beer you've got, basically. What you want is a sort of bitter taste to go with the lamb because the lamb's quite sweet. So pop that in, then you add all the herbs that you've got. So you've got thyme, rosemary and parsley, and then the allspice, the cloves and the raisins go in. And then you cook that for 30 minutes, just on a simmer. And then you add your prunes. And I used, because I couldn't get them for some reason, I couldn't get any normal prunes. I had to get tinned ones, which were fine. Yeah. So if you can't find dried prunes, just use tinned. Pop those in for another 30 minutes. It's got 60 minutes in total cooking. What you get then is the juices and the ale starts reducing down. You've got this beautiful thick sauce. If you really want to be authentic, then go for put some toast and serve that with toast because that's how they would have eaten it.
Really?
But because potatoes didn't start till a lot later. You know, they didn't come into the 19th century. Mm. People were very suspicious of them.
Wow.
they thought they were poisonous.
Well, I suppose, you know, I mean, there is a double-edged sword, of course, a rotten potato, or if there's green, yep. we're encouraged not to eat if there's any green on your potatoes. And we know of blight. So, yeah, that might be it.
It took a long time for people to get into potatoes. So in this Elizabethan period, of course, you know, they were hardly known at all. So use bread if you want to be like an Elizabethan. And if you want to be like me, use new potatoes and serve with some spinach, which was lovely. Fresh organic spinach from a local farmer, I think, as well. And I popped some orange pieces on top just for a bit of colour.
Did you? Was that fresh orange?
Yes.
Oh, so again, that sweetness coming through. I really like that mixed in with the prunes. Wow, that's lovely. And I suppose by using your the prunes that are tinned, of course, you've got extra moisture there as well because they're not dried. Has that enhanced the flavour in any way or changed the flavour?
Oh, possibly. I mean, you're getting a bit of extra sweetness as well. Mm. And that's great because you've got the bitterness of the beer. You know, you've always got to counteract that. That's the problem with cooking. Well, the problem and the virtue of cooking with beer is you get a bitter note added to it. And what a lot of recipes do that use beer, they have some sort of balancing sweetener on the other side, you know. Mm-hmm. There's a Flemish dish which I used to cook for ages because I lived in Amsterdam. Oh, you probably know, but I lived in Amsterdam for 12 years. And we used to cook the Flemish beef stew a lot. And what they use in there is pear syrup. So it's a concentrated pear mousse that's been reduced right down until it's almost black.
Goodness.
And sticky, like treacle. But it still tastes of pear. And they add that to the beer stew as well as a sort of sweetener.
How delightful.
And it's very delicious. Yeah, really delicious. And they serve it also with... And this is worth trying. A beef stew is worth serving with applesauce because it's another thing that cuts through. You can imagine how lovely that is.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And there's that unique taste. You know, if you were blindfolded and somebody put a slice of pear on your tongue, you know it's pear. You know, that's what's so delightful about fruits, isn't it? They all have their own distinguishable flavours. So that coming out is just perfect. And just for our listeners at home, the Conqueror Ale, which is non-gluten-free but is amazing. It's a supreme champion craft beer from Hepworth Brewery, and that is used a lot in casseroles that are being used in restaurants and also in cakes, which I walked away with and is absolutely divine. But if you need a gluten-free ale, they've got Pullman's Prospect and Old Ale. So if you look on the shelves, and it is very clear they're gluten-free. And of course, what is so lovely with the Hepworth beers, Paul, is that they're using traditional methods and the circular farming and working with farmers and talking about, you know, sort of the barley and how it grows and, it, you know, from organic fields in Sussex. It's just a wonderful story. So it really fits in with working with old recipes because traditional brewing methods are being used with all the very finest ingredients, which is so nice. So we have got our casserole. We're serving it with bread, which is, you know, I'll never say no to some bread. Or today you've sort of, you know, modernized the dish with serving with potatoes. And of course, new potatoes, you can't get better than that. And I think smashing them a little bit, the new potatoes, with a little bit of butter.
We're thinking along the same lines. That's exactly what I did. So I cooked them really soft, threw them in a pan with some butter and a bit of salt as well, actually, and then crushed them with a fork just lightly. And to go together with something with a sauce, you know, that's delicious, isn't it?
Oh, it is so good. It is so good. Well, that is lovely. And of course, the whole thing too is that if we want to with the casserole dish, we can sort of pop it in some pastry, you know, make it into a pie, and leads us nicely on to talking about picnics, which I know you love, I love. And apparently, according to the figures that are produced online, is that the average person in the UK will have at least 3 picnics a year. So that does add up to a lot of people picnicking within the year. So I think they've worked it out at about 94 million picnics in the year if we're all picnicking at least 3 times. So if anyone's only having one, you and I probably make up for the others.
Oh, I love it. I love a picnic. You know, that's the thing. I mean, there isn't, when the weather's lovely, there isn't anything nicer than eating outside. And I think, I talk about this a lot, is that food tastes different depending on where you eat it. And if you eat, say, you know, didn't we talk about fish and chips eaten on the seafront that taste very different?
They do. They really do.
It's the same if you eat a picnic in the open air or in the countryside, the food tastes different, you know?
Oh, it really delicious. Does. And I'm just thinking, you know, sort of even in rainy weather, it doesn't deter many of us, isn't it? We'll sit in the car if we have one with our flask and our sandwiches. And it was making me laugh about they were sort of showing some, you know, National Picnic Week, you know, sort of fun phrases, really. And if you go back 50 years, the most popular picnic snack 50 years ago was the humble cheese sandwich. Now, apparently, it's a bag of crisps.
Oh, that's disappointing.
Well, do you know what? I mean, somehow in my thinking, you know, you've got a party if you've a bottle of Prosecco or a couple of beers and some crisps. But what I mean by that is it's a bit of a celebration. If you've got some friends that just pop in, you know, unannounced or whatever, just even going down to the beach and you say, I'm going to grab, you know, an hour and catch up with somebody. You have an instant picnic, you know what I mean? But it's the mindset, isn't it, of sitting, celebrating, talking with someone that you care about. But we're going to go more elaborate because we have you in the studio, Paul. So tell us more about what's in your mind where picnics are concerned.
Well, I want to go back. I want to take you back to the time of Jane Austen. We might not go the full hog because they did have servants and they did have people that would bring and set up the picnic for them.
Yeah.
So, you know,
I do like that idea though very much.
Marvelous butlers, you know, that the pictures, I mean, I've seen pictures. The pictures are amazing. They actually set the whole table up with tablecloths, with all the wine coolers and the, you know, the hampers and the side tables. Everything was brought out basically onto the outsides. So it was like dining inside, but then outside. So is that a picnic? I mean,
well, can I share with you?
Go on.
A number of years ago, and it is a number of years ago, my kiddies were very young. So it was a real treat to get invited out. And an uncle-in-law moved in very nice circles, working in a film studio, and was a big fan of Glyndebourne. You know, the days when you could go yes. and just not worry about social distancing. And he said, look, I've got a couple of free tickets because people can't come. Would you like to come? I said, yeah, great. So anyway, they said, we'll pick you up. I kid you not, there was a convoy of limousines, one of which had the serving staff, the picnic food, and then the guests. And we climbed into the back of a black limousine. We were taken off to Glyndebourne, and we had got butler service and candelabras. Now, not only just for these before the performance with having our canapés and our fizz, but also there was the picnic laid out that we had the next course during the interval. And after the event, while all the rest of the traffic left, we were served lobster, more champagne, and the most delicious little hand, you know, sort of desserts and pastries. And then the people that were there helping to serve sort of took everything down, put it into their limousine, and we went off with ours. I can tell you, you can tell it's an event that has stayed in my mind. The most exquisite food, including caviar. The whole works was brought out, and most gorgeous pies, actually, done, you know, sort of with chicken, as well as the lobster. So, you know what? It's no picnic has ever been the same, shall we say, as that one. It was a rare treat.
And that's taking us back to the way they used to picnic in the 19th century, you know, that you know, the glorious days of Mrs. Beaton. I've got on my website, actually, there's a whole list of things you need for a picnic, essentials for a picnic. And the list, I think, has 40 items on it, including just everything you basically have in your kitchen. It's quite incredible. I'll pop it up on the webpage. I should mention what we're doing.
Yes.
Yeah. Shall I mention the webpage?
Please do. This is really exciting, listeners, you know, because with listening to the Food and Drink Show on Radio Reverb, and we have the podcast, but now we've got a fabulous extension. And Paul has launched this week, so I'm very excited. Please, Paul, tell everybody what's going on.
So I've decided to do a webpage on my website every time we do the show. So my website address is paulcouchman.co.uk, and then it's / and then it's radio-reverb. And what you've got on that website or webpage is all the recipes we've been talking about. There's all the links to the people we've been talking about. So I've got links to Hepworth, so I've got links to Albourne Vineyard, which we're going to talk about in a minute. And there's probably going to be some extra stuff, because what we have every time we do the show, there's usually a few recipes that we, you know, just don't get time to talk about. So they'll be up on that website as well. And also, of course, more importantly, there's going to be a link to my picnic, my Jane Austen picnic experience, where online cookery course, which is coming up on the 17th of July. And so there'll be a link to that as well.
Oh, an online picnic cookery course. Well, okay, explain to us, Paul, about this, because, I mean, your online, you know, sort of cook along with Paul's are divine. So this one, I'm very, because we often think about, right, we're all together, we're picnicking outside. So how are you bringing this into the virtual arena?
So we'll be making four different dishes. So this is a course I've done for real with real people, and I'm basically doing it online instead. It's what's great about the online thing is I can get people involved who normally wouldn't be able to come to the Regency Townhouse's kitchen, you know, who might live, some of them do, in Australia or in America or France. And so we're all coming together again, and this time it's four different dishes. One complicated dish, which is, you know, a raised pie, which is quite complex, but the other dishes are just small things that go with it. And all of these dishes, so there'd be there'll be rout cake, there's going to be a damson fool, and I'm going to do a salamagundi salad as well. And The pie will be either pigeon, which you might not be able to get, but if you can get pigeon, it'd be chicken, or I've also got artichoke version as well. So there's four different dishes. And what we're talking about as well is about the history. So I'm going to be going through, you know, what Mrs. Beaton said every picnic should have. We'll talk about that. We'll go through the history of picnics as well. And the idea is to sort of recreate that picnic experience for people who can't necessarily get out and enjoy that, and also give them ideas so that when they can get out and do picnics, they have lots of recipes they can try, lots of different recipes as well, things you normally wouldn't eat, and things that look and taste beautiful.
And the great thing as well too, Paul, is that, you know, you give everybody, you know, recipes they download, they have a printout, and not only following you live, but of course they can follow the recordings afterwards, can't they, as well?
Yeah. And especially for this one, I'll be doing actually introduction videos, little videos that show the whole process of everything you're going to cook with close-ups and stuff, so that when you actually come to the course, you'll have seen all these videos. So, you know, you basically you don't have to come to the live course. You could actually experience the whole course for all the videos and all the bits and pieces I'm going to give out with it. So it's really, I think it's worth it. Yeah.
Lovely.
So it's on, 17th, I'll just say it again, 17th of July. There is a chance, if you're listening on Sunday, that you'll get an early bird ticket, because they finish at 12 o'clock on the Sunday we go out. But if you're listening to it on a recording afterwards, I think you've missed out on the early bird, but there are tickets still available.
Oh, lovely.
At a higher price, right up until the 16th or so, yeah.
Great.
16th of July.
Ah, great. That's lovely. So kind of give us a feel for ticket price, please, Paul.
Yeah, £22 is the early bird, so that's a real bargain, or £29 is the normal price. So do try and get the 22 if you can.
Oh, yes. And do say that you've listened to Paul on Radio Reverb as well. And this is the show, The Food and Drink Show on Radio Reverb, with myself, Karen Morton, and Paul Couchman, the Regency cook. So as well as the Jane Austen cookery course that they can do online with you, of course, everybody provides their own ingredients. You're going through the method and giving the history and the stories behind it. So, Paul, what for you? I mean, we're talking about the Jane Austen period, but for you, if you were to rustle up a picnic, you know, what are the key essentials that go into a picnic for you?
Well, I'm going to go back to the idea that you always, I think every picnic should have a pie. Because I think pies provide some sort of ballast, you know, and it's a lovely thing to eat. It fills you up very quickly. I love pork pies. There's some really good vegetarian pies as well. I love salads, and I like fish as well. I like something with salmon, because you talk about the Glyndebourne thing. There's something quite decadent about salmon. I think salmon really goes well to eat out. A salmon mousse, for example.
Ooh.
You know, wouldn't that be delicious?
Very nice.
Yeah, I'd love that. And also just some fruits, very simple, actually, chopped up fruit, macerated strawberries, for example, with a bit of balsamic vinegar. That would be delicious as well. There's nothing like eating a strawberry, you know, on the grass, you know, in June or July. They've just come out of the ground, you know, the freshest thing about, you know, it's the best time. Isn't it the best time to eat them in the sun, in the warmth?
I have been growing them in a tub at the back, just a small amount, but it's a small plant. It's been really fruitful, literally, yeah. And they're so sweet and delicious. And I'm taken back now when we're talking about eating strawberries. It reminds me of going back to Glastonbury in the 80s, Paul. And I interviewed Christy Moore. And we were sitting on the grass in our shorts and bare feet, and we were chatting and eating strawberries. And that's another gorgeous memory I have that just warms my heart.
Yeah, well, food is all about, I talk about it a lot. I have a Twitter account and we talk a lot about food and memory and what food can transport you back to times. I mean, that's a lovely example, isn't it? So do you, every time you think about strawberries, does that image come up then? Because I love that idea.
It is. It definitely comes up. And it is lovely. And the other image that I have with strawberries, that it swings between the two, is as a child in Ireland, and there would be the strawberry festivals at this time of year in Enniscorthy in County Wexford. And we would go there and, oh, my goodness, the streets would be lined with people selling punnets of strawberries. And it was gorgeous. So you stuffed your face with them and then you brought loads home as well. But you had to be careful because they often then you had to kind of make them into syrups and strawberry jam, as my mum would do. Yeah. But it was very good. And I'm something I'm going to do, actually, is I love Pick Your Own Farms. And of course, in Littlehampton, you got the Pick Your Own Farm there. And I haven't done it for a while. And I just feel I want to have playful fun taking me back to my childhood and getting on that little tractor there that will take me off to the strawberry fields and perhaps one of the other fields to find other goodies. But you can phone the Pick Your Own Farms in advance to find out what they have that you can pick. And I find that very helpful because each farmer will tell you, you know, to me what they're growing and what's doing well on the day that you go. So I think that's a good heads up before you go. So, Paul, while we've been talking here, you might have heard the pitter patter of rain on my window. And it's something making me smile about talking picnics as it's raining outside. But I think it's going to clear. And I, for one, I'm going to be going out to eat outdoors with a friend whose birthday it is, and my dad. So that'll be very nice. It'll have a picnic feel.
Where are you going? Tell me.
Do you know what? I'm going to Wickwoods. You know the health and tennis club, which is in Aldbourne, just off the A281, and they have a delightful glass house which opens up into gorgeous grounds. So you're sort of protected, but you're eating outdoors in lovely gardens, you know, with trees, and it's very restful and just good English food. Do you know what I mean? It's great service. So we're going to have some nice food there, eating out, but undercover, so slightly eating in as well, which is lovely. So it's been a delight as always, Paul. And please, can you just remind us again of the link to your website so people can find out more about what we're talking about on Radio Reverb with the recipes, and also the link to the virtual picnic making, the Jane Austen style that you're going to be running?
Well, luckily, that's all in the same place. So if you go to my website, www.paulcouchman.co.uk, you'll find the link to my picnic course. If you type paulcouchman.co.uk and then put /radio-reverb, you'll get the recipes we've been talking about today and a lot more information about what you can do with beer or ale. There's some stuff about picnics as well. So I'll pop lots of interesting stuff in there as well. So things we maybe didn't get time to cover in this show will be up on the webpage for you to look at.
Sounds fantastic. That's great, Paul. And I think what I'm going to be packing in my picnic basket, actually, where normally I'd have some wine. What was very good from Hepworth Brewery was their blonde beer. And that was really lovely, very smooth, crisp, fresh flavours. And I thought, it was fantastic, and no additives and all organic. So it felt really fresh And I just thought, you know, some nice breads, my picnic basket and lots of little treats, maybe some of your pies in there would be just gorgeous. So getting all in the mood. Paul, thank you so much. And yes, you're listening to Radio Reverb with Karen Morton and Paul Couchman on the Food and Drink Show.
Yeah, you got that yummy, yum, that yummy, yum, that yummy, yummy. Yeah, you got that yummy, yum, that yummy, yum, that yummy, yummy.
Say the word on my way.
Yeah, babe, yeah, babe, yeah, babe. Any night, any day.
Say the word on my way.
Yeah, babe, yeah, babe, yeah, babe. In the morning or late.
Say the word on my way.
Bonafide stallion. Stable, no, you stay on the run. Ain't on the side, you're number one. Yeah, every time I come around, you get it done. 50-50, love the way you split it. 100 racks on me, spin it, babe. Light a magic, get lit it, babe.
That jet set, watch the sunset, kinda. Yeah, yeah.
Rolling eyes back in my head, make my toes curl, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you got that yummy, yum, that yummy, yum, that yummy, yummy. Yeah, you got that yummy, yum, that yummy, yum, that yummy, yum.
Say the word on my way.
Yeah, babe, yeah, babe, yeah, babe. Any night, any day.
Say the word on my way.
Yeah, babe, yeah, babe, yeah, babe. In the morning or late.
Say the word on my way.
Standing up, keep me on the rise. Lost control of myself, I'm compromised. You're incriminating, no disguise. You ain't never running low on supplies.
50-50, love the way you split it. 100 racks on me, spin it, babe. Light a magic, get lit it, babe.
That jet set, watch the sunset, kinda. Yeah, yeah.
Rolling eyes back in my head, make my toes curl, yeah, yeah.
Well, that's all we have time for the Food and Drink Show today here on Radio Reverb. Many thanks to my co-host, Paul Couchman, as always, for some delicious recipes and some ideas around picnics. And I want to say a big thank you also to Andy Hepworth for taking me round the brewery in Pulborough. And we carried on drinking a few more beers. I can tell you they have a lot on offer there and they even have a shop. So, you know, it's just got everything, ticks all the boxes for a day out. And I just want to remind you as well, too, that wine, we are celebrating English wines at the moment. And there are lots of vineyards in Sussex that you can go and book a tour or pop in like you can at Allbourne Estate. And as Paul was mentioning, we really do like the fact that you can go strolling around the vineyards. And at Allbourne, you can just pop in. You don't have to book ahead. They have a little map. You can go around the vineyard. But what you do have to do, if you would like to have a picnic in the vineyard, you have to book the Wednesday pre your visit on the Saturday for a tour. So you can, if you want to have a picnic in the vineyard, then book up and have some nice Sussex produce already made for you. You don't have to make it. Or you can just, on the off chance, go into their tasting room and taste the latest wines that they have on offer, all produced locally in Sussex, and that's at Allbourne Estate. But do check out the Sussex Vineyards online. There are a great many more. In fact, there are over 750 vineyards in the UK, and we have a great many in Sussex. So all good stuff. So thank you for listening to the Food and Drink Show. I hope you've had lots of ideas, and we wish you a lovely month, and we look forward to seeing you again here in the Food and Drink Show, Radio Reverb.
Oh my, wait.